It's RJ here from the Ringside Rant. Have you guys ever wanted to start a podcast? You didn't have the time or the money to do so, but if you head over to anchor.fm right now and set up your free account, you can start podcasting right now. You can record, you can edit right from your computer, your phone, wherever you may be. Upload it right to the platform and have it distributed to Spotify, to Apple, to Google, wherever you want your podcast, it'll be there. It's all right there in one easy platform. Thanks to our friends over at Anchor.
It's time for another great episode of the Ringside Rant with your host from the hills of West Virginia, J.D. Justin Davis. And from Rochester, New York, this is RJ.
Since 1998, Stamps.com has been an indispensable tool for nearly 1 million businesses. Stamps.com brings the services of the U.S. Postal Service and UPS shipping right to your computer. Whether you're an office sending invoices, a side hustle, Etsy shop, or a full-blown warehouse shipping out orders, Stamps.com will make your life easier. All you need is a computer and a standard printer, no special supplies or equipment. Within minutes, you are up and running, printing official postage for any letter, package, anywhere you want to send. And you'll get exclusive discounts on postage and shipping from USPS and UPS. Once your mail is ready, just schedule a pickup and drop it off. No traffic, no lines. Cut the confusion out of shipping with Stamps.com new rate advisor tool. You can compare shipping rates and timelines easily to find the best option. Save time and money with Stamps.com. There's no risk. And with my promo code POD, that's POD, you get a special offer that includes a four-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type POD, P-O-D. That's stamps.com, promo code POD, stamps.com. Never go to the post office again.
Can't get enough wrestling talk? Well, check out Ringside Rant with top guys RJ and Justin, the kings of ranting. The new shows drop each Friday morning at 9 Eastern, and it'll take you back to the good old days of pro wrestling, but also the not so good days. Ringside Rant is available on all podcast platforms, as well as Full Press Coverage, Visionaries Global Media, Wrestling with Johnners Network, and the Shining Wizards Network. You can also follow the show on Twitter at underscore Ringside Rant. It's Ringside Rant with RJ and Justin. New shows drop Friday morning at 9 Eastern. That's Ringside Rant with RJ and Justin. A couple of top guys doing top guy stuff. It's Ringside Rant with RJ and Justin. New shows Friday mornings at 9 Eastern.
It's Friday. It's 9 a.m. You know what that means. Another great episode of the Ringside Rant is with you this week. I am the man with the magical voice, RJ. He is the king of basting. He is JD, Justin Davis. Justin, how you doing, buddy?
Well, we're good. We've got a turkey in the smoker right now, basting with some garlic butter every hour or so. Throw it on there. Get that skin brown and crispy, you know.
But kind of like your skin.
Having a little early Thanksgiving here at the Davis residence today. You know, I like to just go ahead and get it started early. Thanksgiving's like definitely top two holiday.
What's number one?
For me, probably Christmas. Yeah. Christmas one, Thanksgiving two, July 4th, three.
Yeah, pretty much. I just like seeing 4th of July with everything blown up as far as fireworks and stuff. That's kind of cool, but.
Yeah, that's what happened to your hair, isn't it? A bad 4th of July accident. A bad 4th of July accident burnt your hair off.
Well, this is what happens when you try to burn some weeds in the yard and kind of...
Wait a minute, you were burning weed?
Yes.
Is this how this started? You was burning weed on 4th of July and then you got your hair caught on fire. I see how this goes. Yeah,
basically. And honestly, it's even going farther back now. I'm like, what the fuck? I can't catch a goddamn break. I am not blessed like you are to have the head of hair like you do.
Oh yeah, it's quickly running away from my face.
Yeah, well, yeah, and it's found your chin too. Yeah. But no, yeah. So peek behind the curtain. We're actually recording this on Thanksgiving Eve, so hopefully all of you are settled in.
Isn't this where a turkey comes around and you feed it carrots at night and it comes through your chimney? Is that what happens on Thanksgiving?
I think the turkey comes around and you have, and it like craps out eggs and you have to go hide those eggs.
Oh, it's like Vince's egg.
Yeah.
Is that where Vince got his egg?
Yeah, that's where Vince got his egg. Yeah. Somebody came along and crapped it out and there you go. But yeah, so that little peek behind the curtain, but one thing that we kind of want to keep that Thanksgiving tradition alive is we're going over the inaugural Survivor Series from 1987 from Richfield Coliseum in Richfield, Ohio. It's interesting. It was interesting to go back and looking at this, Justin, just because you get to see what really got us into professional wrestling. As far as just the talent, as far as just the wrestling in general, we see a lot of what we don't see now with the traditional Survivor Series matches. We see it last couple of years, but not to the extent of it's literally everything. So it was interesting to go back and see. But before we get started, I did want to mention something for all the listeners is we have a announcement, a slight format change going on starting next week and going forward into 2022. I will save it for the end of the show. So you're going to have to wait until our closing remarks to find out what exactly that is. But it is definitely something moving and shaking and, you know, going up in the rankings and all that good stuff. So we figure we make a little bit more of a splash for the show. But without further ado, this Survivor Series is pretty much following WrestleMania 3, Justin. So we're coming off the iconic WrestleMania that was, the record-breaking WrestleMania that was from Detroit. And they figure, okay, they need something in that November. They wanted something to really come close to Starrcade and try to run it the same day. And it's always been a conversation for amongst Vince, all wrestling fans.
Not only that, but Vince would threaten, cable companies if they carried Starrcade that they couldn't carry Survivor Series.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And it's interesting to go back and see because a lot of WCW fans, a lot of WWF fans, WWE fans, what have you, have always been an argument between both sides because one wanted to put out the other one out of business or one wanted to counteract or counter program this or that or whatever. But it was interesting to see looking back at it. But it's amazing to look back. This is how far ago this was. But like I said, in January of 87, Hogan is the champ. It was awarded the trophy for his third year. I said 3 years as WWF champion. That was basically what was leading into this whole WrestleMania feud with him and Andre at three. Everybody's seen the iconic promo backstage skit where Andre rips the cross off of Hogan's chest or neck, scratches his chest, rips off his shirt. That was the first real storyline that we started to see in this company, I think.
Yeah, I mean, this you know, you had Piper and Hogan, but it didn't feel anywhere near as big, literally and figuratively, as Hogan and Andre. Andre and Hogan was just, it was the feud of feuds there at that time. Mm. There was just nothing bigger, especially considering over on the other side, you know, WC or NWA had lost Magnum.
Yeah.
And they were kind of looking for feuds, looking for baby faces to go against Ric Flair. McMahon didn't need to look anywhere. He had it all right there.
Yeah. Now, what type of method do you think they really gave to these Survivor Series booking teams? Or were they just basically, hey, you're feuding against this guy, we're going to throw you as a captain, him as a captain, you kind of just throw darts at a board to figure it out?
Well, I mean, just the captains are, you know, put in there based off of the most recent feuds, you know, like Macho Man and Honky Tonk Man. Yeah. And then you just build around them. Same way with Hogan and Andre.
Well, and even with the tag teams too, which I like, we'll get to it in a little bit, but I kind of like that a lot more than, you know, most people. But I think it was just their way of kind of continuing these feuds by getting them to be in the ring, like I said, with the Hogan and Andre thing. And it was kind of continuing going forward with the whole Orndorff thing, because I believe Orndorff was not he fired Heenan previous to this, because Heenan was part of Orndorff was part of the Heenan family.
Yeah. He's back a face now.
But he's back a face now with Hogan, but we'll get that being the main event. We'll get into that later on, but one guy that's always the main event, the showstopper. No, we're not talking about Shawn Michaels. We're not even talking about Bret Hart. We're talking about Mr. Rich Palladino. So let's send it up to the ring to him right now.
It's the opening contest.
All right, Justin. So this being the first Survivor Series, they're trying to get their feet wet with a lot of this booking, a lot of these matches. But you might as well start hot, excuse me. And what better way to start hot is with this feud that Savage and Honky Tonk Man have been having over this IC title. Savage is captaining a team with himself, Jim Duggan, Jake Roberts, Ricky Steamboat, and Brutus the fucking Barber Beefcake, taking on the aforementioned IC champion Honky Tonk Man with Jimmy Hart, King Harley Race with Bobby Heenan, and Danny Davis, that son of a bitch referee, Hercules, and Ron Bass. One of these is not like the other, man. Ron Bass. What was your favorite Ron Bass match?
There wasn't one. But yeah, I don't know. Ron Bass just, I never understood why he was there in WWE.
Well, and more so even in this match, because I liked his character, the tough. I think he was kind of like, he was like at the knob.
Outlaw the Blackjacks. Ron Bass, right? Yeah. Outlaw Ron Bass.
Right. But his son's wrestling now too on the independent.
Kick his ass, Ron Bass.
Yeah. But I always was a big fan of Hercules.
I mean, personally, talking about a hot start, the way this Survivor Series opened up, there was no Vince McMahon intro like we get, you know, on the pay-per-views later on. Opened up with Howard Finkel, you know, which was kind of cool. And the crowd is going crazy for the intro. This crowd is a hot crowd throughout the whole fucking thing, really. And I know a lot of it's piped in, but you can still hear them. Like, they're fired up from the get-go of this pay-per-view. And then when they announced Jesse and Gorilla to the crowd, like they do JR and those guys at AEW now. And the crowd went fucking nuts when they announced for, you know, Jesse and Gorilla too.
Right, right.
And by the way, in case you fans are watching along or watch this pay-per-view before this show, how many times does Gorilla say it's going to be a happening in this pay-per-view? Trivia. The answer is 6.
And the whole pay-per-view.
Yes, it's going to be a happening. 6 times we got that in this pay-per-view.
Well, look at you doing research.
That's right.
Look at you. I'm proud of you.
And at the beginning of this show, Gorilla gives us the rules for the new Survivor Series format. Rule number one, they must avoid getting pinned. Rule number two, they must not submit. Rule number three, must avoid getting counted out. Rule number four, must avoid getting disqualified. And rule number five, if the ref decides at any point that you're too injured to proceed, you will be disqualified. Those are the five rules, everyone, for our new Survivor Series pay-per-view.
So it's like an actual match.
Pretty much.
Okay. That's how I took it.
But when they when they announced this, when Bobby came out with King Harley,
mm-hmm.
dude, the boos were fucking loud when Bobby and Harley Race came out. Big pop for Steamboat and for Macho Man, obviously, on the way into this match. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, just overall, cool intro to this pay-per-view. Well, good opening match, like you said.
Yeah, I'm glad. This is a little over 23 minutes, which when you only have a handful of matches, you're going to have that. You're not going to have these half-hour, 45-minute matches that we'd come accustomed to later on. But I'm glad you brought up Harley Race, because I definitely wanted to chat or talk about him. Why don't you think he worked very well in WWF? Do you think it was because he was from the South, the NWA, those other guys? He was from the territories. Because I'm pretty sure that he was one of the last, correct me if I'm wrong, until Flair came in 92, the last NWA champion to actually get up to the company. Because I know, well, maybe did Jeff Jarrett?
No, was it, he was Kerry a national champion. Kerry Von Erich.
Kerry Von Erich, yeah. Okay, so that was 91.
90. Yeah. But yeah, Harley Race didn't get over in WWE because he looked like everyone's grandpa by that time in there wrestling. Like, he had a big bear belly and little arms, and you know, he looked the same as like Dick Murdoch looked like,
right? Right.
You know, and it's just, that's not going to get over when you've got Hulk Hogan and Paul Orndorff and, you know, Hercules and these guys that look like that. It's just not going to get over, you know, Rick Rude. Like, you think really that Harley Race going to beat Rick Rude?
He could. Like,
everyone knows that Rick Rude beat the fuck out of him if it was a real fucking fight.
I think Harley Race could put up a fight a little bit. Now, maybe not at this age, but.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Not now. Maybe, yeah, 10 years before this.
But no, I just always was wondering. I'm like, man, well, why wasn't Harley Race over as much? I don't know if it's like you brought up, the combination of the age and just the fact of, I don't think a lot of people knew who he was.
Yeah, they didn't care that he was, you know, a six-time NWA champion or whatever.
Right, and clearly the company didn't realize that too, because him and Duggan fought to a fucking double count out 4 minutes into the damn match.
Well, you know, Duggan doesn't know how to fucking count. I mean, that's pretty obvious. Look at the fucker.
We could count to three at least. Maybe. I don't know. But this was one of those matches where it's like, okay, let's throw everybody into it, see what happens. And I don't know. I just, Honky Tonk Man is the absolute worst, man.
You know, maybe it's just because it's the tag team format. I could handle him more in this pay-per-view. He got in there and gave a good shake, rattle, and roll to somebody, I forget, and put them out early on.
Beefcake.
Yeah, Beefcake.
Thank God.
So that was, I was cool with that, you know.
Well, who do you want to, who would you rather watch, Beefcake or Honky Tonk Man?
Honky Tonk.
I'd rather.
The real question is,
I'd rather sew my eyes shut.
Who would you rather watch, Virgil or Beefcake?
Do what, wrestle? Or yeah, just physically sit there and watch them?
Just be on the TV. Yeah.
Depending in an actual match, Virgil is very good. He blends into the background very well. Okay. So I'd say Virgil, just because Beefcake's just so flamboyant. his character anyways.
Oh, especially in like 93 when it's like the Mega Maniacs.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. He's so, they're both crazy then.
Yeah. They probably did lines off the urinal or something in the back, but no, yeah. Danny Davis is one of those other guys that you could kind of sort of put in the same realm of Ron Bass where it's like, okay, one of these is not like the other. But he sure as hell could work, though. I'll give him that much.
Yeah, and he had heat over the whole turning heel referee thing still. So that's,
yeah.
You know, I understand him being in it kind of. The crowd did not like him.
So the ending, we'll see Honky Tonk Man get counted out when he just basically leaves ringside.
Yeah, that was kind of a weird, shitty finish. You know, it was 3-1. And as Jesse said, you can't blame him. He's got to worry about getting hurt and defending the Intercontinental title.
Right, right. And that's the thing. It's like, I think this was their way of saying basically, hey, let's keep this feud going, but let's not push the envelope too much because we knew what we're getting into the rest of the year. We're looking forward to WrestleMania, looking forward to, I believe, SummerSlam was right around the corner as far as their scheduling goes because they didn't have, 60 pay-per-views every year I think they have now.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't have to worry about they could wait a couple months before they get to their next pay-per-view, but the next match was a women's match. So
I hated this match, and
it's
not a terrible match, it's just I hated watching this match again,
but
I
don't know why. All I will say about this, that what I gathered from, two things. One, fucking Fabulous Moolah was stiff as a fucking shit. But that was basically her throughout his whole Horo fucking career. But Sensational Sherry's a WWF Women's Champion, 1987.
Yeah.
Why in the
world? Well deserved.
Oh, no, exactly. That's why I wanted to talk about it. Is. Everybody knows that's listening to the show, whether it's your first time listening, which if it is, thank you for listening. If not, you know how at least I feel, and I'm sure Justin, you probably feel the same way, is about Sensational Sherry. Is damn, she was good, man. She transcended this business for women before, before we had the women's revolution, we had Sensational Sherry. And before Sensational Sherry, we had the Fabulous Moolah. Whether you like her or not, she transcended the business. And to me, I would want to say, my personal opinion is Sensational Sherry is at once a step bigger over Moolah. Me, of course, my opinion, of course.
Yeah, I feel like this pay-per-view is like WCW 96. Like, Jimmy Hart is at every match.
He is. He's in this one, too, with Judy Martin.
I know.
And it's just like, dude, what
he's
the
in
fuck?
The next one. He's in the next one, too.
He's in the next one with the Hart Foundation. Well, they weren't the Hart Foundation. Yeah, they were Bret Hart and Jim Neidhart, but...
Oh, I think they were the Hart Foundation.
Were they Hart Foundation at the same?
Yeah. Because they started tagging him, like, late 85.
Yeah, it was 85, 86, right when they first got in. Because I know Brett was over in AWA, correct?
No.
Or was he up in Calgary?
He came from Calgary.
I thought he was in AWA.
No, this is when Vince, like in 85, Vince.
He went right from Canada to
He bought the territory, and the Bulldogs and Neidhart and Brett all went.
I'd have to go back and look at that because I'm almost positive he was in the AWA at some point, but I mean,
not that I ever knew of.
I mean, I'm probably wrong. Look who I'm talking to about Bret Hart. What the
That's
fuck?
Right.
Say,
how dare you question my Bret Hart knowledge?
Just give him a call. I'm sure you got him on speed dial. If he hasn't blocked you yet. But no, seriously, to get back on, fuck, Sensational Sherry, man. If you really want to watch a good old school women's wrestling match, watch anything Sensational Sherry did, man. Obviously, it's hard to do it now because it's not really on the network, but I'm sure if you find it on YouTube, type in Sensational Queen Sherry, whatever, Sherry Martel, whatever, and see what you can find, man. Because she was she was the best heel, mm-hmm. women's heel. And obviously we'd see her later on as a manager, but we had Moolah's team defeat Sherry's team, 20-minute match. It was what it was. Like you said, it's not going to be an 8-star match in the Tokyo Dome from Dave fucking Meltzer, but it's going to be close to it. Right.
Well, like I said, for the time period, it was actually really good women's wrestling.
Right.
I don't know. It was just also very long. It felt, what was it? 20-minute match.
The women's match.
Yeah. No. Yeah. It was
just over 20. It was like 2017, 2015, something like that.
It took a while. It felt like to me,
2017. So what I said previously about the,
that's the last time you had a sprout of hair on your head, 2017.
What was even then? It was probably 1987. I was 3 years old. That was the best time I had for hair. Christ. I'm still thinking I came out with a fucking toupee. I came out with fake hair or something out of the womb or something. But this next match, this tag team match, holy shit. What was this, 10-man tag, basically?
Yeah.
And holy fuck.
And yeah, we had Tito and Rick Martel, the tag team champions.
It was fun to look at, see those two guys as tag champs, to be honest with you. Because yeah. I don't know why they didn't run with that. Because they were the ultimate beat. Well, Tito was. Rick would later on become a pretty damn good heel. But mm-hmm. in 1987, they were like the babyface team.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously I had Davey Boy and Dynamite. And then the Jock and Raymond, the Rousseau brothers. And then you got Jim Powers and Paul Roma.
Power and Glory, baby. Mike Chioda's favorite tag team.
Power and Glory, man.
And don't forget, B. Brian Blair.
Jim Brunzel, the Killer Bees. No, that's... I still have, I got to take it out to show you sometime. I actually have an old school B. Brian Blair LJN.
Oh, yeah.
I have that, and I have Valentine, and I have Bob Orton Sr. Junior.
I've got a Bobby the Brain, or no, not Bobby. I got Mean Gene Okerlund LJN.
Because, yeah, though that this is when, you know, anybody out there that collects figures, I'm no expert. I'm farthest from it. But those LJNs, man, those are when the figures are great. You know, you could, if anybody pissed you off, you could start beating each other with the damn things that are that heavy.
Mm-hmm, throw them at somebody.
Right. But they're taking on that team we just mentioned. They're taking on the Hart Foundation, Bret Hart and Jim Neidhart with Jimmy Hart. The Islanders with Bobby Heenan, Nikolai Volkoff and Boris Zukov with Slick, Demolition with Mr. Fuji, and Dino Bravo and Greg Valentine with Johnny V.
The Dream Team.
The Dream Team. Yeah, it was this was the Dream Team that I liked. Going back and watching it now, Dino and Greg were a lot better of a tag team than Greg and
Beefcake.
I just never got Beefcake, man. The only thing I got was his music. I loved his music.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that,
cliffhanger, will Beefcake's music be on our music later? You'll have to stay tuned to find out.
We'll have to find out. Why not? But you have to tune in a little bit. You have to wait another about 15-20 minutes to actually hear that. So probably more than that, but I just never understood why you had this many teams in this match. You just wanted to get everybody on the show.
Yeah. Just get everybody a check.
Is that basically what you thought that they were going to do?
Mm-hmm. This is the beginning of that. I know one thing I loved about this match. At one point during the match, Jesse the Body Ventura said that Mechanically, Brett is one of the best wrestlers in the whole entire world. Can you believe that he said that even in 1987, RJ? That shows you the greatness of Brett the Hitman Hart.
See what I have to deal with, folks? You see what I have to deal with each and every week? I know you, the loyal listeners out there, your Money Mikes of the world, your Moustadons of the world, your Devin Dowlings of the world, Amy's of the world, everybody out there that Rose, Coach Rose, all of you guys that listen to this on a regular basis, know what I'm dealing with this week. He doesn't have to pull the Bret Hart comment out of his ass. He can literally talk about him as much as he wants because he's on the fucking card.
That's right. You know, I mean, Bret and Jim looked great in this match, of course, as always. Actually, this was, like you said, a very good match. Everyone performed pretty well overall. Haku got that kick. He put in one of those super kicks.
Haku and Tama, right?
Yeah. Just everybody looked good. This was a great match. Really good.
I've always liked the heel tag teams. And the Islanders is one of those small, those low-key good teams out of this grouping here that, you know, really never got that push. You know, mm-hmm. they got that push because they were with Bobby Heenan. They're part of the Heenan family. But, you know, we knew what Haku would become. He'd become one of the most tough guys in the business, in this company. But looking at him, you knew how good he was when he starts pinning guys like Dynamite Kid. These guys are lasting 20 minutes. Almost yeah. 20 minutes, I should say. And then, because this match goes over, I stand corrected from before. I said we didn't have a half hour match, but this was a 37 minute match, over a 37 minute match. But yeah. when you're dealing with 10 guys.
Yeah, it takes a while to get everybody out.
I got to get all my shit in, pal. But the only thing I really wanted to get your thoughts on were Jim Brunzell pinning Bret Hart at 30 minutes and 27 seconds.
Bullshit.
After Tama drop kicked Hart onto Brunzell and Brunzell rolled him up for the win.
You know, I told Vince, fans wouldn't believe it if you had fucking jumping Jim Brunzell pin me.
And that exactly is what I was hoping I would get, folks. I was hoping I'd get that impression, bad as it is, or as good as it is, whatever side you're on the argument. But yeah, I just want to bust your balls on that because I knew it was going to get to you. But man, it's. I don't know. It goes to show you that how deep this tag team division was in 1987.
Oh, probably the deepest it ever was.
Because right here. It wouldn't really start to dismantle this tag team division really until for another at least decade. Almost.
It started to get shitty really around 92, 93.
But that's what I was going to say. I'd say probably like half, I'd say about another 5-6 years, right when we get to about 93, when everything started being turned upside down between, you know, the steroid trial at that time.
You had the Steiner brothers and you had the Islanders, the head shrinkers, IRS,
Nasty Boys,
Ted DiBiase and IRS.
But yeah.
Don't forget the Mega Maniacs, brother.
I want to forget the Mega Maniacs, brother. No, but you know what I mean? It's just, you look at this roster, it's like the talent in this match alone. There really isn't a weak point. Individually, as a tag team, whatever. You can't really... But it goes to show you how impressive this division was. And I don't think we'll ever, at least in WWE anyways, we wouldn't have seen a good tag team division really until the 2000s. You know, when we saw the Edge and Christians, the Hardy Boys, the Dudleys, And I'm sure a lot of favorites, the Hollies, Hardcore Holly and Crash Holly, but yeah,
didn't they sing, a woman in her, it's a long tall woman in a red dress. Isn't that the Hollies?
I Google it. Google it. I don't, I have no idea, to be honest with you. I all I know is, you know, the I know Jimmy Hart was part of the Gentries. That's all I know. that's not really a fan of, yeah, whatever. But we saw the faces.
Get, wait a minute. Jimmy Hart was in Montgomery Gentry.
Not in Montgomery Gentry. Jesus Christ. Do I have to really come up real close to the microphone right now and tell you he was in the fucking Gentries, not Montgomery Gentry? Fucking twink. Is that what you learn on the hills of West Virginia?
Yes. We know our musical history around here.
Oh, yeah. It, you know you're in West Virginia when you hit the banjos, just go a little bit farther.
Don't you dare start disparaging the good goddamn name of Bill Monroe.
Who?
Bill fucking Monroe.
Oh, did he come up with Monroe Muffler? I tried to keep a straight face. I couldn't. Oh my God. I popped myself. Holy shit. I've been sick the last 2 days and I'm coughing up a lung now. Jesus. So anyways, what I wanted to talk about before we get to the main event here is the DiBiase vignettes we're seeing in between these matches.
Oh yeah. There's a big long one here, right here after this match.
And in between. Yeah.
Yeah. It was good. It was really good, but it was pretty lengthy.
But you're trying to get this guy over. Do you you knew there were going to be long vignettes, but I think they did just do for him though, because you want to get this guy over as a nasty heel or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, like making fun of kids and shit and everything. It was good shit, pal.
Well, my real question is, what public pool was that? Was that Vince McMahon's public pool?
Maybe, I don't know. Was it an infinity pool? Was it Conrad Thompson's?
I think Conrad Thompson in 87 was probably what? We were three, so he was probably what, five?
He's 4 years older than me.
Is he four? So, I thought he was
yeah,
only two.
So yeah.
Okay, so then he's seven.
Yeah. He's a seven-year-old chunky slapdick. Eating up some fucking broccoli casserole.
Okay. I'm glad you brought that up. We'll get back to wrestling. You brought this up because I wanted to touch on this. Have you listened to Eric's show and Jeff's show yet?
No. I listened to Eric's. I haven't listened to Jeff's this week.
So pretty much we're gonna have a turkey off 2022 next year.
Uh-huh.
Between Conrad, Jeff Jarrett, and Eric Bischoff. And now, before we started recording, I saw on Jeff Jarrett's Twitter feed at Real Jeff Jarrett. If you want to follow him, if not, I don't know what you're doing with your life if you're not following him. But if you're not following him, check out the show that we just did last week. It's in our archives with Mr. Jeff Jarrett himself. But no, he basically called out Conrad, saying that he couldn't cook a turkey. And as everybody knows, Conrad is no slouch when it comes to cooking and food and eating and what have you. So now they're basically going back and forth between Eric and his rec tech, Jeff and his big green egg. And basically Conrad is saying, I'll blow you out of the water with a fucking charcoal grill that you tailgate with.
Well, they need to come up here to Huntington WV and taste this smoked turkey I got rolling right now.
Which, it's according to my clock, it's almost another half hour on the smoker, right?
Yeah, I think that that little thermometer is about to pop.
That's what she said.
Speaking of Thanksgiving, what's RJ? What are you going with your favorite Thanksgiving side? What's your best side dish?
Just one.
Well, yeah, you got to just pick one.
I got to see. Okay. So I knew this was going to take a long time. I have to go with mashed potatoes.
I think that that's not a bad choice. I think that's probably correct.
Because, well,
because
but also,
what is a Thanksgiving plate without some fucking mashed potatoes and gravy? It's like,
no, exactly. But you have to have the gravy with the potatoes. You can't have this.
That's like going
potatoes.
To a casino and just having a beer at the bar and not fucking gambling. Like, you're going to eat the goddamn mashed potatoes and gravy.
You're going to eat it and you're going to like it. But no, my mom makes.
Fucking, and you better fucking clean your plate.
Yeah, you don't get any pie. But my mom makes, we call it chip dip potatoes. Because she uses the bison dip from here in Buffalo. It's basically, it's French onion dip. And she mixes it in with the mashed potatoes, makes it a little creamy. And then she puts it in the oven and bakes it with Parmesan cheese on top. So it gets a little crusty on top. Crusty. But if you don't like French onion dip, you kind of out shit, down shit, scream down a pedal. But you don't know, yeah. And everybody.
No, there should be, I don't want any French onion dip in my mashed potatoes. You know what I want? About 3 pounds of fucking butter laying up in the middle of that bitch.
Yeah, and then you're going to have 3 pounds of free... Never mind, we're not going to go there.
My favorite Thanksgiving side dish, my grandma makes homemade noodles that, like, you know, really? Just like those... Just
like egg noodles?
Yeah.
Where you just like egg noodles and butter or something?
It's just... she makes some type of, like, sauce that it's in.
Yeah, yeah.
It's fucking really good. But... Then dessert, I'm probably going to go with some sweet potato pie with some brown sugar and pecan on top.
Now, see.
And all you people that say, I eat ham on Thanksgiving, not turkey. Go fuck yourself. You're fucked up in the head.
Who would ever say that?
I've seen it said already on Twitter today.
Yeah, I know.
And it's really upsetting me.
Actually, ham.
Don't
ham.
Shit on the turkey.
Ham is
turkey
made for Christmas.
Is good.
Ham is Christmas.
Listen, ham is versatile. You can eat ham any fucking time of the year. Easter, ham. Christmas,
ham.
Fucking ham. Can turkey have one goddamn holiday, motherfucker?
Jesus Christ. Sooner or later, we're going to have turkey. Like I said, turkey's that turkey. Thanksgiving is that day when the turkey comes to your house, craps out the eggs, and you have to go hide them and go find them. That's what it is. Fuck. And everybody before, and we'll get off the food hour here real quick, but, and people, it is stuffing, not dressing.
Oh, I like a little oyster stuffing.
Oh, so good. But see, you got to drown that crap in fucking, you ever have giblet gravy?
Oh, yeah. I think I've had every gravy known to man. I live in West Virginia.
So good. So good. So good. But now, if we haven't had your mouth watering by now, and if you haven't had your second plate of leftovers from last night, we're going to move on with this match. Or excuse me, with this pay-per-view. Excuse me. The main event is going to pit Andre the Giant with Bobby Heenan, Rick Rude, King Kong Bundy, Butch Reed with Slick, and the One Man Gang. Taking on the WWF World Heavyweight Champion Hulk Hogan, Bam Bam Bigelow with Sir Oliver Humperdinck.
The Dink.
The Dink. And no, we're not referring. Never mind.
Dink and Doink.
Yeah. And Dunk. Paul Orndorff, Ken Patera, and the magnificent Don Morocco. This match lasted a little bit over about 24 minutes. And
this to me, I know we liked the last match.
Yeah.
To me, this was the best match on the show.
You think so? I just, what the fuck is Ken Patera doing in this match?
I know. It seems like every one of these things, there's someone in there that's like, why in the fuck is he there?
And I just realized it said Pantera, not Patera. Pantera is good
Pantera.
As Pantera. Yeah. Right. With the singlet and everything.
Like, I guess Piper's making a movie, right?
Yeah.
Because I was gonna say, who could be in there instead of fucking Ken Pantera?
As a face?
Pantera. Yeah, as
now,
a face.
See, now I'm getting you to do it.
Yeah, as a face. I'm trying to think of who they had in 87.
But you can't use anybody in the tag team. So it'd have to be somebody from the opening match. Do you put Duggan in it?
Yeah. That's probably who I'd put in there.
Either him or Roberts.
Yeah.
Because at this point in 87, Steamboat isn't a main event status. Brutus the fucking Barbie Beefcake was never main event status, unless he was with Hogan.
Speaking of doing movies, what did you think about Jesse the Body's movies?
The one that we saw on Major League, the movie, the
Wesley Snipes. He's one of the best of all time, baby.
I think he should have stuck with wrestling. We'll put it that way.
He was fucking good in what was that movie? Oh, Predator.
Oh, okay. Badass. Yeah, I'll give you. That was badass, but fuck.
I love Predator. Definitely one of the best 80s movies ever.
Oh, yeah, without question. So we would have to think that Andre and his team were the ultimate survivor team, right? Like, you put them up against anybody.
Yeah, I mean, I really liked Andre's team. I'm glad that Andre was the one who looked strong here in the end, getting the win. Yeah, I mean, Andre's team, you got Andre, you got fucking Rick Rude, the baddest man on the planet. King Kong Bundy, you got Butch Reed with Slick, and the One Man Gang, another big badass. So, and you know who got a big rub in this match? It was Bam Bam Bigelow.
Oh, hell yeah. That was going to be my next comment. It's just like, it was really, they're really pushing him hard, really hard here, making him last so long, basically until right to the end.
Yeah, he was the last babyface, and then he survived. There was three against one, I believe, right?
And he survived everybody except Andre.
Yeah, he beat One Man Gang, and he beat King Kong Bundy.
Right.
And then Andre beats him, which makes Andre look good, and Bam Bam. And, of course, Hogan gets counted out and then starts to fuck around because he's a goddamn sore loser. Andre wins. And then Hogan comes out to celebrate. Like, who invited you, bro? You lost, douche.
Yeah, no, exactly.
He's always such a heel. Like, he's always such a sore loser. Just like in Royal Rumble 92, he gets put out and then he tries to interfere and fucking get Sid out. Like, get the fuck back to the locker room, loser. Quit being a bitch.
Well, that's the thing. He's a champion and he must pose. And
he posed forever at the end of this thing too.
But we're gonna see it.
We had a 25 minute match and a 25 minute pose.
Yeah, afterwards. Exactly. But we're even gonna see him go farther with this feud with Andre going forward for the heavyweight title over the following months, with feuds taking him to the next level and a new level, with Ted DiBiase. We saw him with these vignettes. We know what's gonna happen where he's gonna buy the title when Andre sneak attacks Hogan, and then at the first Royal Rumble in 88, we're actually going to see them sign the rematch from WrestleMania 3. Not a full year after the fact, but it's just like, what the fuck, man? And then obviously we saw in the main event that he controversially would win it, and all shit would hit the fan with DiBiase, and
then we have a tournament.
Oh, fuck. Don't remind me, Jesus Christ.
Hogan and Andre meet again and get a double DQ, so they're out. Macho wins.
I'm sure we'll go over that eventually. watch WrestleMania 4, but fuck, man. I was never a fan of tournaments.
I always liked getting WrestleMania 4 at the videotape store because it was two tapes.
Yeah, because it's so goddamn long. Jesus Christ. Go watch this in 88.
You just felt like, hey, I'm getting two tapes for the price of one. Look at this fucking steal. Give me WrestleMania 4.
Right. But to go off that Savage, I wanted just to talk about, you know, where the IC title will go and then the tag titles would go. And then we'll get into listener questions. But Savage and, like I said, Savage and Honky Tonk Man will continue after this even more than they are now for the IC title. But, you know, Savage would continue and continue and continue to try to, excuse me, to beat him, but he just can't. So he's unsuccessful, so he kind of moves on. So we would see Honky Tonk Man take his record-setting reign for the IC title, holding it for 454 consecutive days until the inaugural SummerSlam, where he was pinned by the Ultimate Warrior.
Yep.
What the fuck?
Hey, greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time, baby.
Chris Jericho?
No, Bret Hart.
Oh, so Chris Jericho.
But,
okay.
But yeah, and then, like you said, the world title match kind of goes through a rigmarole here with Andre and the twins, the Hebner twins, and the referees on Saturday Night Live. And then Jack Tunney says, fuck this shit. Nobody's the world champion. Definitely not Ted DiBiase, who bought it from Andre. Mm-hmm. And they put it up to a tournament where the fucking Macho Man wins. Uh-huh. Cream rises to the top. Dig it.
And pop goes the thermometer. But you know, lastly, I just wanted to touch on, just because I want to touch on this Demolition and Hart Foundation feud that they would have. Demolition would take over for the top heel tag team. Hart Foundation would be at a babyface through the 88 to 89 to 90. Well,
and you had the Brainbusters come in there for a minute.
For a cup of coffee. But no, then we'd see that legendary record-breaking 478th day reign as champions for Demolition after they beat Strikeforce for him. And it's going to be an argument everybody's going to have. I don't know really what the right answer is, but I know what my opinion is. Is Demolition was the best tag team in the 80s in the WWF. I know everybody's going to say Hart Foundation, but
I think you can make an argument for both of them for sure, but yeah, I think I could almost agree that you can put Demolition number one, because they were there at the top for a long time. I mean,
yeah,
you know, early 87 until late 86 until, you know what, 90.
Yeah, they're the team in the WWF, because everybody's, oh, they're Road Warrior ripoffs, blah 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 blah. No.
Totally. But you can make the same argument for the Hart Foundation. You know, 86 to 90, the Hart Foundation was right there. First as the main heel tag team, and then as the main babyface.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. It's an argument we'll have to have for another time. But an argument we will never have is about our loyal listeners with our listener questions. So let's send it up to Mr. Rich Palladino. Hey guys, the man with the magical voice, RJ, here with you just for a quick moment to tell you about a great sponsor, EveryPlate. If you like food like I do, this is the go-to for meal kit orders. Not only is it one of America's best value meal kits, but the recipes come together in about 30 minutes, definitely faster than going down the street to the grocery store, getting all the ingredients, coming home, putting them together, and then eating them. It takes forever to do that stuff from scratch sometimes. But with EveryPlate, not only are they fast and easy to make, but they also come with easy-to-follow recipe cards and pre-portioned ingredients, so you can spend less time prepping and cooking, and quite frankly, spend more time enjoying the good food with your family and loved ones. EveryPlate offers a changing menu of 14 recipes per week, featuring a range of flavors and ingredients, so you'll never, ever be bored again. But quite frankly, and let's be honest, the affordability of these easy meals means more money left over to spend with your family on vacations, on concert tickets. Pretty much whenever you purchase anything from EveryPlate, it's more money in your pocket that you can spend on your family and loved ones. It's common sense, folks. But here's the real important part, guys. Head over to EveryPlate.com and enter the code RingsideRant179. It's pretty simple, guys. My family loves it. My family loves me cooking every night.
And with every plate, I can do that and save money at the exact same time, thanks to our friends over at everyplate.com.
It's listener questions.
All right, it is that segment everybody's been waiting for. It's listener questions. And I made sure to put her number one this week, Justin, because I got yelled at. And rightfully so, because I forgot her last week.
How dare you?
How dare I disparage the good person that Top Gal Amy is and forever will be. She is the best there is, the best there was, the best there ever will be. And you, I'm going to mute you if you discredit that. And yes, I'm trying. I'm kissing ass.
Mm-hmm. I don't wonder. It's not going to work.
Yeah, I know it's not going to work anyways, but I'll try. The only thing that'll make it work if I actually have Tully Blanchard actually go to her home in Arne Anderson. But I don't even think that's even possible. But anyways, she has four questions for us this week. Her first one is, or excuse me, three questions. I can't count. I failed the counting portion of the segment. Does anyone know the name of the ref who was in the ring during the first match of the Survivor Series? He was definitely a main ref for the WWF at the time. So I saw this come in, Justin. So I did a little bit of research more than outside this, so I actually could get this guy's name. His name was John Bonello. He was the inside referee because they had two referees at this first match. They had him and they had Earl Hebner, who is your favorite referee of all time, I know.
Yeah, John Borello, I always call him angry ref. He always seems angry in there.
And he always, it's like, the first time I watched this, I'm like, since when did the WWF hire the homeless?
Yeah, the hair is flopping around.
He looks so unkempt, and he was always the one that wore the wrestling boots, right?
Oh, I don't remember that.
I think he wore the wrestling boots, the black boots with the white on the bottom. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe with somebody else, but because
he's just got regular shoes on here. Black shoes.
Okay, maybe I was thinking of somebody else then. But no, it was John Bonello. It was Dave and Earl Hebner. We even saw a very young Jimmy Corderas in this paper. He was the ref for the women's match.
And Joey Morella.
And Joey Morella was the main event. Excuse me. And rightfully so. So yeah, I like it.
I like in the main event. Jesse starts shitting on Joey Morella.
Right to his dad too.
And I know Gorilla's like, well, he is one of the most accomplished referees in the WWE today.
Oh God, that popped me so hard too. But yeah, that's his name, Amy. So and we've seen him a few times throughout the 80s too. So her second question is, did the WWF show how the teams were picked prior to the show, especially the single wrestlers? I feel the tag teams are divided into good guys and bad guys. I really think they did. I don't know. I'm sure they probably just said, okay, here, like we said before, you know, Savage, you're going to captain this team. Honky Tonk Man, you're going to captain this team. We'll just put whoever's heel and faces, or try to anyways, on each team.
Yeah, I don't think that they did have any reasoning for who got picked. I don't think they showed that, you know, prior to.
I think they really just throw darts at a board and try to figure it out, as we saw with Ken Patera. Not Pantera. Fucking damn this. After I get off here, I'm going to go listen to Pantera now. It was a great band, by the way. Listen to that stuff from 84. Anyways, her last question is, when did they start having one-on-one matches during Survivor Series? So this is 87. We had to wait all the way to 91.
Yeah, Hogan and Taker.
Hogan
and
Taker.
I don't remember any before that.
There wasn't, because I looked. I looked, and I'm like, I knew there was something earlier. I thought it was Hogan and Taker, but I could have sworn that there was something earlier than this, like a Hogan and somebody. But there wasn't prior to 91.
Right.
Rightfully so. That was the first. There's a bit of trivia for you there, folks. who was the first singles match at the Survivor Series? And Hogan and Taker for the title. And that's when Taker won, right? Because that was when Flair came down. Or was that Tuesdays in Texas?
Yeah. Tuesday in Texas, I think, is
that was when Flair came down.
Yeah.
Okay. That's
what. And then once again, Jack Tunney said, fuck it, we're putting the title up.
Yeah,
right. Whoever wins the Royal Rumble will be the champion.
Fucking hell. But hey, we got Flair as a heavyweight champion in the WWF. So we got something good I came out of it.
For sure.
Thank you, Amy, for that. And I hope you don't hate me. So our next question comes from a new listener, Lopez, who's a top guy over at AFS. So thanks for that. And thanks for listening. He had very kind words. I will say that he DM'd me this question. And he said, hey, I really like what you guys are doing. And you are now in my queue for podcasts. So appreciate the kind words, Lopez. But he asked, what's our favorite Survivor Series logo? And I'm very partial to the one that's going to be tagged with this, not so much this original one, but the ones that throughout the 80s. Once you get to like the 90s, it's.
Yeah, I think the original one for me, definitely.
Because, and the one that's going to be tagged with this that I've been that I tagged all the, the posts with for the questions. You can't go wrong with the original one of anything. And yes, it includes movies. So thanks for that, Lopez. And we look forward to having more questions from you in the near future. So I figured I couldn't start with this guy because you'd shit on him either way. But everybody's favorite money man, Money Mike, is up next. So I hope you're doing well, Mike, after Charlotte lost at Survivor Series. I know he's probably very depressed at this point. So hopefully Justin will not shit on him.
I'm always nice to Money Mike.
Of course. Of course, without question. So he only has he only has 30 questions this week. So I narrowed it down to about three. So
you divide it by 10.
I carried the one. You got to remember to carry the one.
He got? I don't even want to know.
So he says, what are your thoughts on the Survivor Series concept overall? And I'm assuming he's talking about the teams, the elimination matches. I've always liked them, but were always ways to continue feuds or start new feuds. Similar to the Royal Rumble. And I think that's pretty much what this original one did, is we saw the Andre and Hogan feud go forward. We saw the Savage and Honky Tonk Man. We saw a new one with Demolition and Hart Foundation. So that aspect of it, I enjoyed. But I just think that they should never went away from it. They should have kept with it. I'm not saying you can't have single matches. I say you can't have other matches outside this. Have one big one at the end or something, like the Royal Rumble. Have a main Survivor Series match, the ultimate Survivor Series match. Have it intergender. Have three guys, two girls on each side. Guys against the guys, girls against the girls. You don't have to worry about that intergender BS that a lot of people are seeing nowadays. Not saying it's bad. I'm just saying it is what it is. But at least that's how I look at it. What about you, Justin?
I agree with RJ. That's how I'm answering all Money Mike's questions.
Oh, Jesus Christ. He's not gonna ask any more questions, Justin. You realize that, right?
That's the goal.
Goddamn. No, I will specifically put him first from now on just to piss you off. So his second one is one of the primary arguments against Survivor Series is there are no true stakes. What stipulation would each of you like to implement at Survivor Series to be more impactful in terms of long-term storytelling?
I agree with RJ.
So your comment is you have no comment.
I think one fun thing to be, you know, if you have like in this instance, the Hogan, Andre main event teams.
Yeah.
Whatever that main event is each year, the sole survivor gets the number 30 pick in the Royal Rumble.
I agree with Justin.
No, but that is a good, you're starting to see more pay-per-views. Nowadays you could basically make whatever stipulation you fucking want because, you know, we're going to have a title match on Raw. You're going to have this, you're going to have that. That having a stipulation like that, I think would only have worked back here in the 80s and 90s when you didn't have as many pay-per-views as you do now. Because you can only do the title matches so many times. Because back in the 80s and the 90s, the title actually meant something. Now it's just, it's like a fucking prop. Nobody wants, nobody holds it. Nobody gives it the just due that it should deserve. So, like I said, I agree with Justin. So his third and final question is, do either of you have any memories from watching the show live? Also, happy Thanksgiving, Justin. I hope you both have a great day. More so, Justin. Word for word, I swear to God. I swear to God.
Well, I'll have a better day when we're done with this question right here.
Jesus Christ.
Let me think here. Do I have memories of watching this show live? Well, since I would have been 2.5 years old, no fucking dumbass, Money
Jesus
Mike.
Christ. The fucking
I don't have any memories of this show. Now, couple years later, would my slapdick ass be marching my ass to the video store to rent it? Yes. But did I watch it live? No. And happy fucking Thanksgiving to you too, Mike.
Jesus Christ. So anyways, so I'm a few months older than you, Justin. So I seriously don't remember this until later on, much similar to you, going to the tape store and grabbing it and watching it after the fact. But yeah, I didn't really grasp anything, really remember any matches really until probably, I'd say 90 or 91 at least, when I was watching it live, just because it wasn't, pay-per-view wasn't as popular in the 80s and it was in the 90s and even going forward into the 2000s. But, and now everybody has streaming sites, so that's obsolete at this point. But I thank you, Money Mike, and happy Thanksgiving to you. Hopefully yours was great and you actually smothered everything in gravy.
Try to have something other than carbs on your plate for once, Money Mike.
Jesus Christ. So our next one is Devilish Devin Dowling. His first of two questions is, do you think Survivor Series should be back on Thanksgiving night or is it better the weekend before?
Weekend before, because honestly, Thanksgiving weekend is sacred for football. You know what I mean? Like, you got Ohio State, Michigan on Saturday. You've got NFL football, 3 games on Thursday. You got NFL football on Sunday. It's just, it's a big football weekend. I don't know if I'd want to fuck around with it if I was Vince.
Not so fast. I thoroughly, thoroughly disagree with you, Justin. Only because how many times can you watch the Detroit Lions get their shit kicked in by whoever they're facing this tomorrow? It's what, the Bears?
They play the Bears in Detroit. I actually am picking the Lions.
Are you really?
Yes.
Oh, of course you fucking would. But no, I would want to see it on Thanksgiving night again, just because I want that tradition back.
You know what? I got Conrad Thompson and Tony Schiavone on Thanksgiving night. That's all I fucking need.
You have them? You're inviting them over to the Davis household?
No, they're doing their, they do.
Oh, the watch along, Starcade. I forgot about that. Didn't they do the watch along already?
Well, yeah, with David Crockett, but I don't know if they're doing another one. Probably not. Maybe that's it.
Because him and Bruce used to do one with Survivor Series. But I don't think they're doing that.
Doubt that.
I highly doubt that. But anyways, so his second question is, was the 10-on-10 Survivor Series match too many people? And I'm pretty sure we talked about that earlier. But I don't think this one was. I think a lot of the other ones were, just because with this one, they had a lot of good teams in this division that they wanted to get their stuff in to get showcased, because this being the first one, you want to get your top tag teams on the TV, on the pay-per-view, so you can promote it. Like I said, 10 on 10 is a lot, but like I said, with this, it's not, I don't think.
Yeah. Well, and they started moving people out pretty quick. Like the, you know, Nikolai Volkov lost pretty quick. They were out and they started clearing it out relatively quickly at the beginning of the match.
Yeah. All righty. So our last set of questions comes from the ranter of the week himself. We'll get to him in a little bit, but Mustadon asks, Vince created the Survivor Series to counter program Starrcade 87 and would leverage it and the other pay-per-views he was set to create to keep other wrestling promotions off of the blossoming pay-per-view platform. Do you feel this was the right move back in the day? Why or not?
Yes.
We briefly touched on that. I think it was the right move.
Yeah. For all the things that Vince is, one thing he is a shrewd businessman. Unless it comes to football. And so, you know, this is Vince, you know, being very in his aggressive stage there in the late 80s. So yeah, I think it was the right thing to do. I think it cut the nuts off Starrcade eventually.
Oh yeah, I think it did too. Eventually. I think the last good one was probably about 96. We'll be going over that soon, but
well, it forced them to go out of Thanksgiving and all that stuff, and even out of Greensboro. And after that happened, I think Starrcade lost its luster.
Right. He also wants to know about, we touched on it too, but just the last comment about the length of that tag team match. It was 30 something on minutes. He wanted to know if it was too long. When you're dealing with 10 men, dude, I think half hours at least what you need, 35 minutes tops. So I think you got to get all their stuff in, pal.
I agree with RJ.
there you go. So his last question is, we briefly touched on this guy too, being pushed fairly high as Bam Bam Bigelow was slated to be the next big star for the WWF. But some say he just didn't have, quote, it, end quote. How do you feel he would have done either as a baby-faced ally for Hogan or as a monster chasing Hogan? That's a very good question.
I think him and Hogan for the title would have been some of Hogan's best matches.
So chasing him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think there's too many baby-faces. There wasn't enough heels in the 80s here. Mm-hmm. And I think the heel that we've gotten later on from Bam Bam would have been so good here in 88 and 89 because he would have been so intimidating. I say be a combination of Bam Bam and the One Man Gang to go against Hogan. Holy shit. Because I would try to emulate Bruiser Brody. Get him a la like him, but through Bam Bam, if that makes absolutely any amount of sense. I don't know if it does, but I agree with you, Justin, where I would want to have him chase. I don't think you want him as a baby face because we know now after the fact how good of a heel he was, but then we don't know. Okay, here, go, kid. Give him a microphone. Go. You don't have tag team with him with Humperdinck. Give him a mouthpiece. Put him in Heenan family. Even align him with Andre. Get under that learning tree. Why not?
Well, Andre didn't like him. That's the first problem.
Well, I know, but hindsight being what it is, maybe that's a way to smooth it over. I don't know, but you know, you get in there, and you learn from him.
Hey, if Andre don't like your ass, you get fired. Just ask Michael Hayes.
Yeah, you're fucked. But no, so thanks to Mustadon for that. So what way for a transition than this is let's go up to the monkeys in the truck to hit the button for wrestling with music.
Let's get musical. Let me hear your body talk.
All right, Justin. So I'm going to read the top five. What we have, right as we stand, we have 24 themes right now on our list for wrestling with music. We're going to add two more this week to this list, but I'm going to read you the top.
Let's go. Fuck it. Let's go top 10. Let's read the top 10 list. Top 10 list.
Top 10, starting at number 10. I'm going to do the voice again this week. LOD at number 10, Ric Flair, The Four Horsemen, Dusty Rhodes, Jake the Snake Roberts, Demolition, Bret Hart at number 4, The Undertaker at number 3, The NWO at number 2, and Stone Cold Steve Austin at number 1.
All right. So there's our top 10, and I'm going to start off this week with my pick. And as you guys know, we are picking these from the show that we watch each week. Mm-hmm. And we are going to hear some rhythm and blues here from the honky tonk man himself, RJ. Let her rip, Tater Chip.
I got long sideburns and my hair slicked back. I'm coming to your town in my pink Cadillac. I'm just a honky tonk man.
That's a honky tonk man.
I'm smooth, I'm hacky, I'm bad. I got fired by Eric Bischoff. I got fired by him. I should have wrestled, but I didn't want to. I'm just honky tonk man. I got fired by Eric. I got fired by Eric. I'm cool. I'm cocky. I suck. All right. Okay.
I lost to the Warrior in 3 seconds.
And then I lost my title, and I wasn't the same since. I'm just a honky tonk man.
Okay. You know, that is.
I had way too much fun with that.
Honestly, when we first started talking about this, yeah. I said I wanted to put honky tonk man last. But I can't put honky tonk man last.
Why?
Because Hulk Hogan's WCW shit deserves to be last.
Oh, how dare you?
I think that honky tonk man music is actually not as terrible as you think, because it was meant to be heel music that no one liked. And so if that's the case, it did its job correctly. Kind of like HBK's stupid shit. I think I'm cool. I know I'm sexy. That was a ripoff of the Honky Tonk Man.
So are you seriously comparing Shawn Michaels to Honky Tonk Man?
Yes.
Their music, I hope.
I mean, they're both supposed to be singing about themselves for heel music, right?
I guess.
I would put Honky Tonk Man in front of Vader at 22.
How about 23? Under all Vader.
Right. All right. We'll go there.
Okay.
Honky Tonk Man sliding in near the bottom, but don't worry. Hogan, WCW, still reigns supreme as the toilet bowl of wrestling theme music.
I was, oh, God damn you. You freaking call an audible when I don't think you're going to call an audible. And God damn you.
So what kind of music do you bring for us this week, RJ?
Well, I had something similar to Hogan. A man that likes to strut. A man.
Ric Flair?
No. Well, no. A man that likes to cut.
Oh.
A man that likes to wear fishnet tights. He's the one. He's the only. And I almost fucked that up. I'm not editing that out. I'm not editing that out. I don't care.
Almost. You did fuck that up.
Yeah. Well, sue me.
As usual. It's type production issues we got going on over here at the Ringside Rant, ladies and gentlemen.
I got to hire Mighty Mike to do the editing.
Sometimes I think that Colby's over there running the board. Or not Colby. That's Canadian Travis's son.
Jesus Christ. He's upstairs. I went upstairs in our break.
Don't let him break your arm. Like
yeah, yeah, right. Did. Yeah, right. Anyway, so.
Sometimes I think Gavin's running that soundboard.
There you go. None of this is getting edited out. I'm telling you that right now. I just don't want to do it.
That's fine.
So, anyways, Brutus Let's the fucking it it. Barter. Brutus the
barter.
Fucking barber beef.
I'll beef. Barter with you.
Yeah, barter. Yeah. Yeah. Shut up. Here we go.
I love the bass right there. This is a Jimmy Hart production right here. That puts me up in my feels. This one's a good one.
Yeah, it's not bad. I've heard worse.
The best part of these videos, if you guys could watch us on Zoom, the best part of the show is when we play the music and RJ and I can see each other dancing in the video screen while they're playing.
Usually it's without any pants on, which nobody wants to see. Trust me.
Dancing
not even...
with no pants. Well,
no pants dance, no pants dance.
I think that, okay.
Where are you thinking?
I'm digging that. Let me see the list. Pull it up. I can't see it.
Oh, you didn't? I didn't share the. I got to share it again.
Hold on. No, I got it. I got
it. No, hold on. Hold on. I insist.
No, I got it. It's right here. I see it. So I think.
I'm thinking. Right above Owen.
No, I think it goes higher.
You think it goes higher?
Yeah, I love this music. I really think this is good shit, pal. I would put it in between. You're going to think I'm crazy. I'd put it in between Goldust and Eddie Guerrero at 14.
How about this? Because I was thinking something similar. I didn't think it was totally crazy. Because I was thinking between Eddie and Goldberg.
Yeah, that would be fine. That was where I first thought.
Because I just think because my thought process behind it was that it's iconic.
Yeah. I mean,
and it's just something when you can dance to it.
It makes you want to strut and cut. I mean, that's all there is to it.
All right. So now we have, I got to redo all this anyways.
You really put his name on the list as Brutus the Barber and not Brutus the fucking Barber.
Yes. I did because I don't care.
So now we've got a list of what?
26.
26.
The list is
growing. The top 10 did not change this week.
No.
But, you know, you never know.
I'm sure everybody will crap on it, so.
Oh, of course, especially that Eddie Panther or whatever his name is. Eddie the Panther.
You're a good sayer of words. So another guy that's... a good sayer of words. We're not going to get to him yet, but we're going to get to him a little bit. But we want to talk about what's going on next week, Justin. So I mentioned at the beginning of the show, we're going to do a little bit of a format change. So starting next week, we are going by month by month. We're going to be going to a specific promotion, whether it be WCW, WWE, or ECW for the whole month. So basically, we're going to be doing the whole month leading up to that pay-per-view at the end of the month.
And so each month, we will pick a different promotion in a different year. Mm-hmm. So we will go back to that month and year in history. So for instance, next week, we will be starting December. Mm-hmm. And that means we will be looking at December of 97 from WCW. And so we will watch three Raws. To start the month,
Nitros.
The first or three Nitros. I don't know why I said that. Yeah, three Nitros and then watch Starcade 97 at the end of the month. So looking forward to this new format. I think it'll be fun for us to, it'll give us a snapshot of what's going on in that promotion during that month and year and time. So we're looking forward to that, kind of watching the buildups to the pay-per-view each month. And so after we get done with December, we'll move into January and we will announce what we'll be watching then. But I'm looking forward to the new format for sure.
Yeah, definitely look, definitely dig in it. We had this idea. We kind of collaborated on this together, just something a little bit more unique than what we have right now. And just to kind of get you guys into that mood of Starrcade, because Starrcade, unlike some other individuals that I got buried by, Eric Bischoff, I think Starrcade was the pay-per-view of all pay-per-views for WCW, regardless. Just because I was always about the whole nostalgic feeling, the whole historical reference of that pay-per-view. So,
and also with the new format, we're going to try and start to do some more interaction with fans, maybe do some watch-alongs with the pay-per-views and have a guest do that with us each month. So, you know, listen each week. If you want to be a part of that, let us know, and we will definitely like I said, definitely looking forward to the change up. It's not a big change, but just kind of a change in what shows we talk about each week.
Yeah, a little bit more dedication, a little bit more of a specific format. But you can hit us up. Like I say, if you want to be a part of the show, let us know, whether it be myself at underscore ringside rant. He is at JD2040. You can follow us across all your major podcasting platforms. Go over to that iTunes, Apple Podcast, whatever you want to call it, that purple icon. Hit us, give us a 5-star review, subscribe, let us know what you think. You can find us across all your major podcasting platforms. Like I said, Full Press Coverage, Shining Wizards Wrestling Network, Visionaries Global Media, Wrestling with Johnners, as well, like I said, Full Press Coverage as well.
And Morse code.
And Morse code. So we appreciate everybody. You can check us out also on our merchandise over at ringsiderant.whatforapparel.com. Get yourself a hoodie, Justin. It is getting cold out there.
That's right.
It was Christ, it was colder than shit here this morning. But anyways, regardless, we want to send it up to our ranter of the week.
What's going on, guys? It is the Moostadon at Moostadon on Twitter, and I am here as the ringside ranter of the week. Well, the topic was obviously Survivor Series 1987. This is a show that has a lot going on with it, with only 4 matches going on. But I mean, as an NWA guy, I've always looked at this show as kind of the B show that took place back on November 26, 1987. Yeah, Starrcade 87 had its hiccups, but if you look at the in-ring work, if you look at the stories that were being told in Chicago versus what was happening in Cleveland, you've really got to side with Jim Crockett Promotions and Starrcade. I also understand a lot of you will say, well, that was also the beginning of the end for Jim Crockett Promotions, and you wouldn't be wrong. You're completely right. But at the end of the day, Starrcade was the better show. And I know Justin and RJ are WWF guys. Justin loves WWF, thinks it's the greatest thing ever. But at the end of the day, the NWA is why the WWF exists. The NWA is why WWE is still going on today. They built their entire legacy, and their entire momentum was built on the backs of NWA guys, most of which had competed at or were scheduled to compete at a Starrcade. Case in point, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. 2 years back-to-back at Starrcade. Amazing matches. Moostadon out.